Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
So, who is due into the pit lane next? Let's have a little bit of a look. Johnny Palmer with Jeremy Shaw and John Hindhoff in the Haggerty Global Broadcast booth. Well, I was going to do the prototypes, but handily, the Mobile One sponsored number 14 dives into the pit lane within my view. So that is the car that's a little bit further down the field for Jack Hawksworth, but pops into the pit lane, Shay, and is that on time?
It is, but this is the car that came in and did an additional splash before we went back to green,
trying to elongate the
stop. But they are doing a driver change. Aaron Talitz is taking back over. Now, Michael De Quesada has already met the minimum time. He has been driving the car for more than 2.5 hours. Aaron Talitz has not. So it will be Aaron and Jack to the end of the race, you would expect. And that's a very strong duo, the full season pairing, sharing a car for the first time in an endurance race this year. They've had to put the car back up on the air jack because one of the tires was not fully secured. But all of that was done while the fuel probe was still attached. Windshield tear off for Aaron as waiting on the fuel. Now it's off. And away goes Mr. Talitz. 40 seconds total stopped in the box, which meant that, yes, they did bring the car in a little bit sooner because they had more fuel in the tank.
38 laps since it was last in the pits for that top off for that car. So not a million miles away from what the GTDs can do. They can do a little over 40 laps in full green conditions. But again, they might just be thinking further down the road, Jeremy, in terms of how they balance their drivers and how they use them in the next 4 hours.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they did that top off during the last yellow because they just got back on the lead lap. A short field to kind of get back on the lead lap, then the extra stop for a top up. And now, I think, you know, he was in a train of cars there. He was stuck behind the 12, 23 and 57, and just ahead of Vandy Lally in number 44 car. So I think perhaps they brought him in, get him in clean air and try and make up some ground before the other guys make their pit stops as well.
Yeah, just waiting really now to see. Even at this stage, you've got to be starting to think, haven't you, Jeremy, about where you are. You can't expect a safety car, so you've always got to plan for it to go full green from here. So if you're in the prototype teams, you are working in lumps of 32 laps and knowing how long approximately that takes. If you're the Acura team Penske guys, probably a little bit closer to 30 maybe, but even so, that's what you're working in now, and you're thinking to yourself, right, how much tires have we got, how much fuel are we going to have to put in, how many more stops are we going to have to make, and crucially, I suppose, Jeremy, even for the teams at the front of the field, who's going to do the stints when do you put your closer in the car? Is it going to be with that long chunk of darkness? You might actually decide somebody to take you into the full darkness so that their eyes can get used to it, and then somebody else to take you to the end whilst in full darkness.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's so many kind of strings to this bow. There's so many ways you can play it, and that's what's so cool about it, isn't it? Both of the Porsches then in at the same time, the second and third place cars, number 16 for Wright Motorsports, number 9 for Pfaff Motorsports. In two also is the second place car now in GTLM, that's number 3 Corvette.
And an awful lot of tyre pickup that needs to be removed from the front bumper of that Vet as well, and tear-offs galore for not only the windshield but also side windows, it looks like, as well. So a full service going on there. Intriguing battle at the sharp end between the two leading DPIs. I'm fascinated at the average lap times that continue to pour out of the Elio Castroneves and Pipo Dirani cars. Dirani marginally quicker than Castroneves, but it's only about 1 or 2 tenths per lap on average. And then Dirani hits a load of traffic and he lost about 6 tenths of a second in one lap not too long ago. But now, last time through, was 1.3 quicker than the race leader. So under a second and a half now is the advantage on lap 280 for Castroneves over Pipo Durrani.
Jeremy? Yes, amazing, isn't it, Johnny? On lap 262, so 60 laps ago, when the round of pit stops has been completed, the number 7 led number 31 by 2.1 seconds. I think you said it was 2.5 last time around. So, yeah. You know, it's just incredibly close between them. Your number 6 car, that was about another 3 seconds back. It's actually just closed in because he's had a good lap and Pipo Durrani's had a bit of traffic. But, yeah, it's an intriguing motor race. It really is cool. Pit stops for the leaders also in GTD.
We've had the 24 BMW into the pit lane. That is the black one. The last time it came into the pit lane, it was John Edwards staying aboard that car. And now it is actually time. Jesse Krohn has jumped around the side of the car, not only added a drinks bottle,
but... Excuse me, Shea. We've got the championship leader off in the beach at turn 10 from fourth position. Ryan Briscoe's put the Cadillac in the dirt, but does not come into the pits. He continues... So that little incident, not too bad. Down towards turn one, barely even dusty, actually, the usually immaculate Cadillac. And he was involved with a couple of other cars there, including the 55 Mazda, full 360, and somehow managed to rally cross it through the gravel bed at turn 10A. And it was Harry Tinknell that was in close proximity there, maybe trying to make a lap back. He was down extreme driver's left. There was a GT car in there as well, which may have certainly taken the concentration of Ryan Briscoe for a moment. In fact, I think they were both trying to put a lap on that. But my goodness, mate, that was a scary moment for the championship leader, as in... comes Dane Cameron. Shea Adam, finish your thought that you started off before with your little roundup from the VP Racing pit and paddock update, and tell us what's happening to the number 6.
Simon Pagenaud is getting into the number 6 fuel and tires for the Acura Team Penske car as well. We had a slew of pit stops for GTLM. It was Jordan Taylor into the 3. Marcel Fessler stayed aboard the 4. Jesse Krohn in the 24 BMW. And both of the Porsches into the pit lane now. It is Earl Bamber into the 912. And who is that getting into the 911? It might be Nick Tandy staying aboard for another stint, actually. GTD, we had a lot of pit calls. It is now Kyle Kirkwood in the number 12, Aim Vassar Sullivan Lexus. I already told you that in the 14, it was Aaron Tielitz. For the 57, it's Alvaro Parent taking over that Acura once again, and Spencer Pompelli into the 44 Magnus Racing Lamborghini. He and Andy Lally sharing that car back and forth for the remainder of the race. The last time Jeff Westfall drove the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari was at the green flag. He's now been reinstalled into the white and black Ferrari. Patrick Long sharing the 16 Porsche for the remainder of the race with Jan Halen, and Patrick Long was a beer, which is quite mind-blowing. He himself has a beer after Lyft Gekult. We were having that discussion on Twitter. He's now back behind the wheel of the number 16. I didn't mean to say that he was having a beer and driving on track. That would be bad. Matt McMurray is once again in the number 86 Meyer-Shank Racing Acura. Zach Robichon in the number 9 for Pfaff Motorsports. And who was the other driver change that I saw?
Roman D'Angelis?
Oh, Robbie Foley. Good. Back to the 96 Turner Motorsport BMW.
Okay, super dupes. Johnny Palmer was watching with interest that number 10 Cadillac in the gravel. Now coming up to turn 5 in behind the 911 Porsche, which is Nick Tandy leading its class, and just has to hold fire for a moment before it goes through.
Yeah, well, Jeremy and I were slightly puzzled. This is hours ago now, when Renge van der Zande came across the line very, very slow, and wondered exactly what had led up to that. Never did get to the bottom of it, but I suggested that maybe the 10 had been through the kitty litter at 10A and 10B, which caused him then to be slow coming underneath the Fox Factory Bridge and across the line. So I'm going to suggest that's actually the second time the 10 car has done that in the space of a few hours. But the 10 kind of had little option that second time around with, as you said, Harry Tinknell at very close quarters. GT cars involved galore through there too. And Ryan Briscoe's done incredibly well to scrub those tyres quickly and get back on the pace. I have a feeling that you mentioned about the 911 doing well. Now, 911 was on an out lap, and Jesse Crone in the 24 has just made a stop as well. So we're having this little flick-flack between the two GTLM leaders because of the tyre temperature once again. They're both coming out on cold tyres, so you get this moment where one has a chance to lead and then the other does.
It just goes, doesn't it, to how on the ragged edge, Jeremy, they all are, because that incident with Briscoe was as a result of him having to brake just a little bit more because of the developing situation. And you know, if people are maybe not so used to watching motor racing, not seeing anybody at the track, of course, but if you are tuning into this or you're watching with friends and you haven't watched a lot of motor racing, when you're trying to pass somebody, it's not just a question of, oh, just brake a little bit later or accelerate a little bit harder, just press the throttle a bit more. These guys are on the ragged edge all the time.
They really are, aren't they? You're right. I mean, you know, this is so competitive, this racing right now, that you can't afford to give everything. You've got to fight for every inch on the racetrack. It's intense, and you know, we've talked about it several times already. You know, the levels of concentration that are required, the mental capacity, really is, you know, it's a very, very big factor, potentially the outcome of any of these long distance races.
VP Fuels Paddock report this time, following up with a couple of things that I've noticed on Twitter. A lot of people out there pointing out that the number 9 FAF Porsche only had one operating headlight. Now, there's two explanations for this. The first of which is they only have one headlight as they come down the pit lane. So anytime they're on the pit lane limiter, you will only see one headlight illuminated. Now, if out on track, there's only one headlight, as it states in the rule book, you may start and continue the race as long as you have two functioning headlights and two functioning taillights. If you lose one headlight and or one taillight, you are allowed to continue. If you lose two headlights or two taillights, you must come in to fix either one. So as long as you've got one working, you are okay to keep going throughout the darkness. But if you can repair it during a pit stop, they highly encourage you to do that in race control. The other, and to be honest, you're racing around Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, where it's really, really dark at night. You want both of your headlights.
Well, I was going to say, headlights here, and not just so people can see you. It's all about actually seeing the road ahead for the headlights. The tail lights, they could, you know, marker lights, I suppose, but it would be better to have two on. But yeah, I agree. You'd much rather have two headlights. And
the other thing was for Nigel Scott-Dobby. I noticed he sent something on Twitter to Ollie Gavin after he got out of the car in the last pit stop. Ollie did meet minimum time. He has done more than 45 minutes in the number 4 Corvette, but he looked a little bit gingerly as he was walking back over to the pit wall. So I checked in with Ryan Smith just to make sure that Yardley Hastings' finest sports car driver is doing okay. He had a biking incident earlier this week and injured his ribs. He's been receiving treatment over the last few days, and the plan has always been for him to do as long as he could in the race to help out Marcel and Tommy and to meet the minimum drive time. But Oliver Gavin doing this race in a good deal of pain, as you can imagine, as both of the leaders are into the pits. But for Oliver Gavin and Tommy Milner, Petit Le Mans is one of two races on the IMSA calendar that they have not won together as a duo. So here's hoping that they can get that done today. Okay, we've got the 31 in. Pippo Durrani coming in and will be staying in the pit lane, I would imagine, because he's done a triple. Yep, that's Philippe Albuquerque's helmet with the Portuguese flag on the side. So that car is about to go really, really fast. And also into the pit lane was another speedy Brazilian. That would be Elio Castroneves. Elio, who was in for the first time of the last time they came in for the pit sequence. He should be staying aboard. Nice big burnout by Philippe to try and get heat into the Michelins, and that worked. And guess what? It was Elio still aboard the 7.
Yeah, and talk about speedy, Jeremy. Right at the end of that stint, as the car was light, Elio wringing every last piece of performance out of the leading number 7 Acura team Penske.
Yeah, 109.84 stunning lap for Castroneves, just hundredths of a second away from that car's fastest lap of the race. He knew the pit stop was coming. He had a clear track in front of him. Let's take advantage of it and make sure he can maintain his lead. The lap, he'd actually extended the gap from, well, it fell as low as a couple of seconds. It was out to 7 before he came into the pit stops ahead of, it was Pippo Durrani, wasn't it? He was driving 31
yes.
car, Shea.
Yeah, correct.
So it was 7 seconds right before they both came onto the pit lane between those two. We'll see what it is once they get back up to speed again.
Turner back in.
Carl will lead, of course.
Yes, of course.
In the interim. Yes. It's just under 10-4, by the way.
No way. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
No. Turner Motorsports into the pit lane. I'm sorry. This is bad for this crew who last year won the Petit Le Mans, but they have pulled the left rear tire off the car. They're now looking
pedal box
at
issue.
Levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pedal box issue. They're looking at the levels of liquid going into the pedal box, but they seem to be fairly full for Robbie Foley. He was in the pit lane not very long ago. He was one of the notable driver changes, actually, that we had just not too long ago. But Robbie sitting in there, the door came open and it's just sort of sitting on the pit lane looking sad and alone at this point, but they are looking at the rear of this car, so perhaps it's some sort of a throttle issue.
Well, I think what it probably is either, well, that you don't use the clutch once you're going on these cars, so I'm guessing it's got to be a brake issue. And they were Robbie had his feet tucked right up out of the way so that the mechanic could shine a light into the pedals. He was checking the reservoirs of the brake fluid on the inside of the car and made sure everything was okay there as well. So I'm not sure about that, but clearly Robbie not happy, Jeremy Shaw, with something, and has come in quite early on that. The Turner Motorsport BMW last in the pit lane for that car was only five laps ago, so no way that car should have been back in the pits. So very early indeed, and that car already had its problems. It's dropped right down to the tail of the field. This is the number 96 car that we are talking about. However, the battling Lexus and Acura continues into turn one. Ooh. And there was a little contact there, I think, between the Lexus of Matt McMurray, the Lexus of Aaron Tielitz, and the Acura of Matt McMurray going into turn one.
I'm not sure which one it was, actually, because it must have been 14, because number 12 car was just a little bit further back down the road. Yeah, you're right. It would have been Tielitz trying to make that move. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was a change. That was indeed a change of position. So McMurray up into Tielitz up into fifth position that McMurray had occupied. But I'm certain there was a little bit of side-by-side contact. Into the pits for two Cadillacs, the number five Mustang sampling car with the yellow flashes on the side, and also the glossy black number 10. And the reason they've dived in is because we've got, well, at the moment they are local yellows for the hard point Audi, which is stalled at the top of the hill at turn two. Now, this is what we were talking about early on. IMSA waiting to see how this develops. It's not off the track, and the 30 car still has lights on, but I don't think they'll leave it there too much longer. That's just on the brow of the hill. It will be able to be seen from the cars coming up the hill. Waved yellows, not yet gone to full course caution. And that looks dead stick for the number 30 machine trying to be restarted. It's Andrew Davis behind the wheel, and he's hitting fuses, talking to the pits to try and get the control alt delete reset done. Andrew knows that car very well indeed. Coming down through turn 12.
No headlights.
Good point, Shea. Came down, already had no headlights. Now, did he try to put the headlights on? And that's what stopped it. It is getting quite dark on the front straight. You can see the difference the lamps around the circuit, the lighting around the circuit. And by the time he got to turn one, it was just slowing down. And we have had to go full course yellow. No choice. Car in a dangerous position. Can't have it. Recovered an hour and 8 minutes of green flag, and for the fourth time, well, the car is turning over. No fuel pressure, I don't think, there, Jeremy, is the issue.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? That's unfortunate for that team. That car was a couple of laps off the pace in GTD. Now, of course, it's going to fall a lot further behind that, but very disappointed. I think the race control, as you were suggesting there, John, just waiting as long as they could before they threw the yellow, just to not to, you know, try to keep it a level playing field for everybody else, basically. So anybody who hadn't made a stop was given the opportunity to do so. Nobody did, so the yellow comes out.
That was a good lap, maybe as much as a couple of laps, certainly a lap and a half, two or three, about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. That's a good lap that everybody went by it. And as you said, Jeremy, everybody had the opportunity. No chance of getting anybody over the wall or rolling any vehicles whilst even waved yellows are out there. And it does look like it's going to have to be a recovery for the hard point number 30. You weren't with us earlier on. Exciting news for Hardpoint and for Earl Bamber Racing. They're teaming up together to form a new alliance for the new for 2021 IMSA sanctioned Porsche Carrera Cup North America, with the new 992 Cup cars is playing a starring role. Earl Bamber and his brother Will teaming up with Hardpoint to field, I think, a couple of entries is the plan in that new for 2021 Porsche Carrera Cup North America. Eight venues, 16 rounds planned for next season.
A little bit unfortunate for the number 8 car that just came into the pits, I think, the lap before. I think the number 52 car did, so that's going to put number 52 car a whole lap ahead again of the number 8.
This is an LMP2, yes, exactly.
This is an LMP2, yeah. But I think Huffaker is going to need a pit stop now in any case. So,
yeah, he was 3 or 4 laps away from a pit stop before the yellows came out, Jeremy, spot on. Still over 3.5 hours to go, so plenty of racing left in this one at IMSA Radio. If you want to get in touch, let us know where you're watching. What are your thoughts so far as we moved in, as we move into the final, or close to the final third of the race? So we are beyond the official sunset time by about 7 minutes. 3 hours and 40, I think we said 3 hours and 43 minutes, didn't we, Jeremy, after official sunset before the 10 hours runs out. There's still light in the sky here, courtesy of the fact that we haven't seen a cloud all day. And that is, it's a beautiful evening in terms of the weather. Thank you to all of you who have come to watch and remain at the circuit. Dropped a couple of degrees Celsius in the ambient temperature, and the track temperature has plummeted down under 30 degrees Celsius now. Did show as high as 55 in the quote-unquote heat of the day. In comes Scott Huffaker from the lead of LMP2 with the first opportunity for the pits open for the prototypes, Jeremy. That number 52 car with the sort of grey and white and blue stripes, looking already a bit battle-weary in terms of the dirt on the car, but straight and no dings or dents in that car. All the dive planes there, and that's very important in a race that's going to be as competitive as this.
Yeah, very much so. It's been certainly a good run by this team so far. That'll be Simon Trummer, I think, climbing aboard. Yes, it is. A Swiss driver climbing aboard, number 52 car. Good stint there by Scott Huffaker. Did exactly what he's supposed to do. The number 8 car had been driven and is still driven by Mikkel Jensen, the Danish driver, who was turning some very, very good lap times, but Huffaker wasn't really losing out much at all. It was a very fine performance by him. Interesting that we'll see none of the prototype cars onto pit lane. I wonder whether the number six car might come in just to top off with fuel, but that was only in, you know, less than 10 laps ago, because it was on a slightly different schedule compared to everybody else. But no, they've elected not. They'll stay out on the track with Simon Pagenaud in third position.
Nikolai B remembers the R8 number 30 had side-on contact with the barriers at turn 7 earlier in the race. Wonders if that might have shaken something loose that eventually has come unfastened. They'll be very annoyed if that's just a battery lead or something like that, although there seem to be plenty of electrical power and enough to turn over the V10 engine. What it didn't have was any fire. And now whether that was no spark or no fuel, but certainly something there that was preventing the car from getting fire in that V10 5.2 litre engine. And Andrew knows that car very well indeed. So if there was a way for him to get it back, or even on limp horn mode, I'm sure he would have found it. There was quite a lot of talking going on as well. So there's obviously some messages on the dashboard. Now, they've pulled the car up close to the pit lane, but they're waiting. That's really, really heads-up work. As the pits were just opening for GTs, they didn't want to tow the hardpoint car into the pit lane entry, so they've paused on the uphill before turn 11, before taking that car down into the pit lane. That is really very sensible recovery and officiating by everyone concerned. Shit, you've got a pit lane full of very expensive GT cars.
Isn't it lovely? Fuel and tires for Corey Lewis as he stays aboard the 48 Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini. It was fuel and tires for the number 9 Pfaff Porsche as well. And that is Zach Robichon, who stays ahead. And he is ahead of the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari. Jeff Westfall slightly overrunning his marks, but did not take tires. That was fuel only for the Ferrari. So he will have a slight advantage when we go back to green, because the temperature has dropped like a rock. It is down to 58 ambient in the air, degrees Fahrenheit, 64 degrees on the track. Getting heat into these tires is now going to become a thing of an issue for the remainder of the race. Everyone in GTLM came in fuel only by the looks of it for no driver changes. I'm sorry, fuel and tires for everybody in GTLM, but no driver changes there.
Thank you, Shay. Now, the GTLM, of course, Jeremy, do have the slight advantage of being able to go to the colder Michelin tyres. By that, I mean the tyres which are happier being used in cooler temperatures. Everyone else, it's a single slick compound. What happened just a few moments ago? 63 car goes through its pit a tiny bit and they couldn't get the fuel hose on, so it had to be pushed back by the team. They were, I mean, talk about a game of inches in the pits. Our Porsche keys to the race. We said pit stop problems could cause issues and make it difficult. It only needed a splash of fuel for the WeatherTech car, Jeremy, but literally ran through its pits on the concrete apron by, what, a couple of inches, if that. But it was just far enough that the fuel hose wouldn't make the connection on the dry brake fitting.
That's really unfortunate for that team. Slight miscue there. Was it Westfall who brought that car in, or him who's taking
yes.
it out? Yeah. Okay, so that car is going to drop from second position, most likely, I think, to 11th at the tail end of the pack in GTD. That's how close it is. So one little mistake like that, particularly during a pit stop when everybody comes in together, is going to be even more costly.
Yeah, and it was just a momentary lapse, but cost them a good 4 or 5 seconds and some track position as they go back out. Now, all right, they're still right up the tailpipes of the cars around them, but it is cost them a couple of positions there.
Quite a lot of shuffling of positions there after this round of pits. So I just have to wait till the... Well, they've just come round again now, I think, haven't they? So number 48 car will continue to lead, despite the fact it needed quite a bit more fuel than everybody else. It had been in nearly 10 laps before most of the other contenders in GTD, but the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini will continue to lead. Number 14, Aaron Vassar-Sullivan Lexus, has jumped from 5th to 2nd. That's Aaron Tielitz driving that car. Patrick Long, who came in 3rd place, leaves in 3rd place. Zachary Robichon in 4th, out in 4th. Jeff Westfall, apparently he's only dropped to 5th position. So he's lucky there. I thought he dropped foot much further back than that. Mac McMurray decks up in number 86 car. That's about where it was before it came in. The Kyle Kirkwood in the number 12 car, he has lost a couple of positions down in 9th, behind Alvaro Parent and Roman De Angelis.
Shit. Who took... did the... Now, let me see. Which car was I looking at there? Did the 63 take tyres there or not?
No. And that's the reason that they didn't lose more positions, as Jeremy was just going through the rundown. Because Jeff Westphal overshot the marks, they had to push the car back and therefore lost a little bit of time. But they had been planning to jump everyone on this pit stop by not taking tires. Instead, by not taking tires, they don't fall further down the charts.
Yeah, so not as planned. Porsche keys to the race that we were talking about in Michelin. Countdown to green was about managing the tires, particularly when it got dark. The traffic with only 31 entries, it's going to be a pretty quick race. And then, of course, not making mistakes in the pits. That could be very costly indeed. Keep those penalties down as well. We've seen a couple called already. 3.5 hours to go. We're back to green. 451 laps now predicted by the software. That will be entirely dependent on the pace at the front of the field and whether we see the BMW safety car again. But at the sharp end, it's the DPI Acura of Helio Castroneves who gets the jump on the start. The bright white headlights now very visible through the S's and up into turn five. Faf number nine back into the pit lane. Zachary Robichon brought that in. And also, just when we were talking about our Porsche keys to the race sheet and not taking any penalties in the pits, there has been one for one of the GTD cars.
Yeah, that looked like another puncture for the number 9 Pfaff Motorsport Porsche. That car already with 2 previously on the day. And the penalty comes the way of Bill Riley's team. That's a rare day. Wheel rotation while on the jack stand. So a drive-through penalty for the Riley Technology Mercedes. It was brought in by Ben Keating. It was taken out by Ben Keating. So at least it's not someone else serving a penalty.
Already down in 10th position at that car. But potentially losing a position to Zachary Robichon, who's just made that pit stop. Castroneves versus Albuquerque at the front of the field with Simon Pagenaud just in there and Renger van der Zander and Sebastian Bourdais. Oh, yes, please. That's a top five that many championships would be very happy to see, as we've still got just on 3 hours and 25 minutes to go in the 2020 Motul Paris Le Mans, live in sound and vision with IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. 98.1 is Road Atlanta FM at the almost, you might almost say, the home of IMSA racing in its modern era, after it was the original home and still the home of Paris Le Mans from 1998 onwards. Here at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. Sirius 217, XM 202, and around the world on RS2, IMSA Radio. In the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, Jeremy Shaw and John Heindorf. Johnny Palmer with us as well this weekend on this slightly longer race than we are normally doing with the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Still 2 rounds to come, of course, WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, and then the series finale at about the time we'd normally have the encore at Sebring. 12 hours, the Mobile One 12 hours of Sebring coming your way mid-November to decide the championships. Clocks will have changed by then and fallen back, which should make it a little bit lighter in the evenings. But even so, I'll have to check to find out how much darkness running we're going to get at Sebring. A few people have been asking about that. David Faulkner saying, if Penske can win here at Paris Le Mans, there's a NASCAR playoff race at the Bathurst 1000, all within a 12-hour period, that would be pretty impressive. Penske tend to be very good at winning things. And they had a very successful year, sure, didn't they, last year in everything they're doing around the world.
They won every championship in which they participated except for two, NASCAR. NASCAR were the only two that they didn't come away with the victories.
In the championship, but they certainly won races, didn't they?
Oh, yes, they did.
Knows how to run a good organisation, does Mr. Penske, and picks very good people. He'd be the first to say that it's all a team game, Jeremy. And interesting to see as well that on that, and somebody was asking this earlier on, and I forgot to mention it, but on that, the competitiveness of the team, particularly here in IMSA, where we're very much used to seeing Roger Penske on the pit box, it happens in the stock car racing and the particularly in IndyCar as well, hasn't changed one iota since Roger has taken a wee bit of a step back, because that is the calibre of the organisation, and that's because of the calibre of the man at the top, quite frankly.
Yeah, hire the right people to get the jobs done yep. right. Yes, exactly right. That's exactly what he has done there. This whole Penske organisation really does run like clockwork. They've had for them, at least up until the last three races, a massively disappointing season. Of course, that changed dramatically with the win the first win of the season for that team, which quickly followed by two more. And they're looking to make it four in a row. And it's, once again, it's that number seven car of Elio Castroneves that leads right now. Change though in GTD. Aaron Tielitz has taken the lead away from Corey Lewis at the restart in GTD. So 269 laps in the books. It's Tielitz leads from Lewis. Patrick Long in third position ahead of Jeff Westfall. And then Matt McMurray in the Acura. And then the Aston Martin, Roman De Andrews. So it's Lexus Lamborghini, Porsche Ferrari, Acura, and Aston Martin, the top six in GT Daytona.
Yeah, and that Aston Martin just sneaking around in sixth position. Roman De Angelis now having taken that Heart of Racing number 23 over. And this is exactly what they did in the shorter race, the very short race that we had last weekend at Charlotte, Jeremy. Barely called their name in the early part of the race, but they stayed out of trouble, and then as other people fell to the wayside, picked up their pace and picked up a podium.
Yeah, and made some passes as well. Roman De Andrews had a really great last stint there, made some passes towards the end, and he was gifted. There was a penalty for whoever it was that ran in the back of somebody else. I forget who it was. So that was a week ago. There's so much happened in the week since then. Certainly I can't remember. But it was a great run for them. And we've been talking about them, haven't we? Sneaking around in the top five or so all the way through this weekend as well. So they're well positioned now. They've got Darren Turner and Roman De Andrews to, I think, finish off the race for that team. Shay will confirm whether Ian James has completed his stints. I would imagine he probably has. And he'll get back with his team manager hat on and see what they can do in that Heart of Racing Aston Martin team.
Just hearing from Starworks that Mikkel Jensen was hit by a car doing the pass around. I think the car is fine, they say, but the steering is a little off. So that keep an eye on that number 8 car for Mikkel Jensen. Tower Motorsport by Starworks still in second place. And by the way, I got that completely wrong. When the clocks fall back, it means darker in the evening and lighter in the morning. Thank you, Nigel. Never been able to do time conversions very well. Shea Adam has a Riley update.
They done blowed up. The 74 Mercedes is back in the pit lane and will not be leaving again. Ben Keating came in to serve the drive-through penalty, and then I saw the P come in next to the name again. So I texted Gar, and that's what he said. So it very unfortunate end of the day, whereas they've been coming off of a streak of podium finishes.
Oh, that is very unusual. The GT4 AMG, whilst I'd say everything's 100% reliable, problems like that seem to be few and far between. And any news from Hardpoint while we have you, Shea, about Andrew Davis's problem?
Nothing from them yet. They're still trying to diagnose.
Okay. Sounded like the engine wouldn't restart, but as we said, plenty of electrical power, just no fire in the uppy downy bits, as Nick Damon might say. 55 Mazda looking racing again. This is Ryan Hunter-Reay, who's in amongst the higher up prototypes, in fact right on the tail of the second place car of Philippe Albuquerque, the red and white Whelen Engineering racing Cadillac. That's the 31 car. They're through turn one now and heading up to ever darkening skyline. Beautiful, beautiful evening sky with orange and dark blue already filling. Oh, they've got somebody off down in the S's to driver's right. Right off towards the far side. Now, didn't see which car it was, but it was white headlights, so it was a prototype or a GT Le Mans car. See if I can get some more information on that, but the lights were still on, which was a good sign. Certain that wasn't somebody to the side of the track. Not seeing anything on the race control channel, so maybe they have got that car going again. But just for a moment, caught my eye as we were watching the battles go through there. Not see anybody falling down. The timing and scorings. GT Le Mans Corvette by 2.5 seconds to Nick Tandy. Then another 2 seconds further back, BMW and Jesse Kron. Marcel Fesler another 2 seconds further back for Corvette. Remember, Ollie Gavin carrying a bit of an injury sustained on a bicycle. And so allowing his two teammates to do the bulk of the work. Yardley Hastings' finest sports car driver. Down into turn 10A with a clear track in front of the lead Corvette for Jordan Taylor underneath the Fox Factory Bridge, and then diving down to turn 12 across the line. Another lap completed for the yellow Corvette that leads GTD.
Yeah, not for the first time this season. That car sort of kind of vaulted back into the lead during that round of pit stops. It had been trailing the number 24 car before the other stops, which came just about 10 laps earlier under green. And then when they came in for yellow, the number 3 Corvette was down in third place behind the number 24 and the number 911. And those three just flip-flopped. So it's, instead of being 24, 911, 3, it's now 3, 911, 24, the top three in GTLM.
GTD, Tielitz, Lewis, Long. There's that Wright Motorsports Porsche doing the same in GTD as we've seen it do in the past as well. Nice quiet races, absolutely good. That's exactly what you want, Jeremy. An uneventful race where the commentators don't talk about you until right at the end when you're on the podium. That's normally a sign of a good race, isn't it?
Yeah, they say, where did he come from?
Yeah.
That's right. You've run the ideal race then, probably.
Yeah. Unless obviously you've driven off into the distance and you're at the front of the field. Yeah, exactly right. But that right Porsche has done that a couple of times this year, to be quite honest. Pat Long, the highly experienced and very quick Californian, applied his trade in Europe for quite a long time as a younger driver. And that car just half a second away from second position, and therefore about a second and a half, 2 seconds away from the leading car. Aaron Tielitz just trying to stretch out a bit of a lead, but there's nothing in those times last time around in the GTD battle. Behind Pat Long, Jeff Westfall is only another half a second further back after the restart. Matt McMurray. So we've got Lexus leading from Lamborghini, from Porsche, from Ferrari, from Acura, for Aston Martin. So top six again. All different manufacturers and all lapping within a gnat's whisker of each other. GT3, very, very competitive. GT Daytona, very competitive indeed. The lights from Jeff Westfall's Ferrari pointing up towards turn 7 at the moment, as darkness has certainly now descended. It will get darker though, Jeremy. There's still one or two vestiges of a bit of light in the sky, but out the back here at Road Atlanta, it is dark. It's not fully lit by any stretch of the imagination. It's not even as well lit nowadays as Le Mans is nowadays. Up to 5, 6 and 7 is pretty dark out there.
Yeah, it's sort of bitty around the track. There's lights here and there. Most of the corners, 6 and 7, there's some lighting there, but certainly nothing like as bright as it is at Daytona or anywhere like that, or even on the front straight here. But the good news for the drivers now is the sun has well and truly set, so no more issues there with the visibility as they go into turn seven. I think that was pretty much taken care of during that brief full course caution period just a few laps ago. So I think pretty much everybody breathed a sigh of relief to have the sun actually go down behind the trees during that full course caution.
Yes, and that, as Jeremy suggests, gives the drivers time to react to the changes. Always difficult to know what to do, whether you want a visor, a tinted visor because the sun's in your eyes, whether you want a clear visor with a tape strip on the top, somewhere in between, or do you just take your hand off the steering wheel and put it in front of your face when you're going up to turn seven. You know, I mean, it really is sometimes just the simple things that make it work. I have seen drivers put a fairly thick piece of tape on the top of the visor before, and then what you can do with an open face helmet is drive with it open a little bit when you need to, and then just pull it down or tilt your head forward, which you can do with the new hands devices. You've got a little bit of movement forward and back, so you can just sort of tilt your head forward a bit and use the tape on the visor to block out the sunshine. One or two drivers still use a peak rather than a helmet, a visor, but most people now have gone to a visor even inside the closed cockpit cars, just in case anything untoward does happen. Coming down in towards what we can only describe the sprint to the finish now, Jeremy, 3 hours and 11 minutes.
Yeah, that's right, and it's exactly what it's going to be, I think. I mean, yeah, there's going to be no quarter asked or given here. It's so competitive. We talked about earlier on, I mean, all of the prototypes have set best laps within, you know, a tenth and a half or so of each other. The only set exception being the number five car, curiously. Sebastian Bourdais driving that car at the moment. He's just slipping away a little bit from the back, from the tail end of the field there. But once again, Elio Castroneves, he's got the hammer down at the front of the field. And in the 12 laps since the restart, he's put now a little over 4 seconds between himself and the pursuing Philip Albuquerque. But, you know, at this stage in the game, you don't worry at all about just a few seconds here and there. There's quite likely will be another caution before the end of this race, particularly in the night time. Makes things rather tricky out there. In any case, there's still a lot of strategy calls to be made as well.
Questions being asked about how much darkness we'll have at Sebring. November the 14th is the 68th Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. And I can tell you the start times for all of the races that weekend, except for that one. The Michelin Pilot LNG Automotive Network 120 will start at 12:05 on the 13th. Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge race has its first race on November the 13th at very early 8 o'clock in the morning. Super Trofeo races on the same day at 9:05 and 3:40. GT3 Cup Challenge at 2:35, but nothing on the start time for the 12 hours as yet. Though I'm led to believe it is 10:10 start for that race on Saturday, November the... What did I say? 14th, yes, the 14th. So with that in mind now, we can work out how much darkness there will be for the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring in this weird year. Very weird year. But a weird year that we have had some excellent motor racing in. So amongst all of the genuine tragedy that has touched many families right across the world, we have been very fortunate in motor racing, in both the sporting side of motor racing with the quality of the competition we've had, and also in the business side of motor racing, Jeremy, that we have been able to get back to racing in IMSA's case from July onwards, and people have been able to earn their money and continue to run their businesses.
Yeah, it has been brilliant, hasn't it? We've just had some tremendous racing in this series, and great racing in North America as well. The IndyCar series has been really, really good, and all the way around the world to Molly. I think it's been a very good year for racing. We wondered whether we were going to get any racing at all at one stage, didn't we? But you know, hats off to everybody for making something happen and still doing it in a responsible manner.
And thanks to Watford and Mark Books, Alex Lassart, for firing in the start time. One among many for that Sebring race at the 14th of November, which is right about the time we would have normally expected to have been at Sebring for the Michelin Encore. So we know, roughly speaking, Jeremy, what the weather's going to be like at that time of year. It's generally very pleasant. Sebring is a venue that a lot of manufacturers test their race cars through the winter months because of the consistency of the weather. So I think we should be okay at that time of year, fingers crossed.
I would think so. I mean, our resident expert from Florida knows exactly what the weather's like that time of year. And you know, from my perspective, Florida particularly central Florida, in the middle of the summertime, can be pretty unbearable. In fact, when we were back there for the rescheduled race a while ago, it was pretty steamy, wasn't it? But it should be a lot more hospitable, let's say, in November, Shay.
Yeah, 2 weeks before the wet season ends. So definitely better weather climate out and around. You've got a lot more people coming in to go to Disney World that time of year. Normally, that's sort of the peak of the tourist season, is the middle of November through the first week of January. So it's definitely a much more enjoyable place to be. That being said, it is still the wet season, so there is still a chance of either severe rain, potentially a hurricane. I mean, anything can happen. It's Florida.
Well, yes, and anything can happen at racing. By the way, earlier I think I said, and my apologies, Riley do run both versions of the AMG. I think I might have said when Shea was talking about the issues for the 74 Riley AMG. It is, of course, an AMG GT3, not a GT4. So my apologies for getting my nomenclature the wrong way around for the Riley Enter team.
But they do have a GT4, and it raced yesterday, and it looks almost identical.
Yeah, I know, and I was completely in. I've got GT4s on my mind for another reason at the moment as well,
mountain.
Which I will I'll tell you all about possibly next week when we see what happens. Number five, Mustang sampling car. That is certainly a Cadillac and certainly a DPI, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Coming through turns 10, A and B, and heading under the Fox Factory Bridge. That car sitting down in fifth position for the number five. It's Sebastian Bourdais on the lead lap, 17 and a half seconds away from the leader. Top five are all DPIs and are all on the lead lap. In LMP2, Simon Trummer with a 17-second lead on Mikkel Jensen. That's the 52 PR1 Matheson, Orica, Gibson and the Tower Motorsport by Starworks, similar car. So Trummer from Jensen, that's 52 and 8. In GT Le Mans, Jordan Taylor leading for Corvette Racing by 2.8 seconds ahead of Nick Tandy. Another 1 second back to Jesse Kron and Earl Bamber, 3.5 seconds further back in the 9-1-2, which has got ahead, Jeremy, and Marcel Fesler, and that is a change.
It is, and it's been a long time coming, because you remember the number four car, I think Shay talked about it, picked up some damage a while ago. I think as a result, was that a result of the incident down at the
exactly so.
Turn 10, when number 24 car came barreling down?
Correct.
And since then, it's been kind of struggling to match the pace of the rest of the cars, and number 912 Porsche had been stuck behind it through several pit stops and everything. It just hasn't been able to find a way past. Well, finally, it has. And Earl Bamber now has already put a fair margin between himself and Marcel Fesler. In fact, to the tune of 5.4 seconds. And Earl Bamber now is beginning to close on Jesse Kron in third position. By the way, another very super quick lap from Elia Castroneves a couple of laps ago. Turn a 9.9. Any sub 10 second laps, I think, would be notable. And Elia Castroneves did just that. His gap to Albuquerque now out to over 8 seconds.
Wow. Just seems to be able to turn it on when he needs to, doesn't he?
Yeah.
absolutely extraordinary. By the way, official sunset on Saturday the 14th of November at Sebring, get this, Jeremy, is 5.34 official sunset. So the race starting at 10.10, that's going to give us 4 and a bit hours of darkness, nearly 5 hours of darkness.
Wow.
That is a very long darkness time for the Sebring race. Start eating the carrots now. Shea Adam, you have got both of the Penskys in the pit lane for this VP Racing Fuel Pit Report.
Yeah, the sun might go down at 5.30, but it's not going to be dark until 6 or 6.15. Elio Castroneves stayed aboard the number 7 Acura Team Penske fuel and tires for that car. There was a driver change, though, for the 6 car. That was Simon Pagenaud's red helmet getting out and carrying the seat insert over to the wall with Simon attached. I would hope it's not just his helmet doing things without him. But taking over that car as it now leaves the pit lane after fuel and tires is... Popping up on my timing screen. Juan Pablo Montoya. There we go. And it was suspenseful. Into the pit lane also comes Philippe Albuquerque from the lead of the race in the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac. He should be staying aboard that car as it is only his first stint.
Hello to Dan Fly. Wine, cheese, and baguette. His version is... grocery store salami, Diet Coke and Ritz crackers. And in the amphitheatre as well. Hello, Dan. Listening in here at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta, in for the Whelen car, Shea, just as we're about to trip over another hour of racing.
Fuel and tyres for Philippe Albuquerque. And are they going to give him a windshield? Oh, they gave him a windshield tear-off. That's so nice. As all the people up on the wall, Tim Key, making the decisions on strategy for them today, already made one brilliant call. That is stop number two for this team, looking for Philippe Albuquerque to try and carry them through the darkness.
Thank you, Shea. Well, are you ready for the last 3 hours? Because that's about where... we are going to go. Pit stops coming just before the 3 hour mark. So still another hour before we award more points in the Michelin Endurance Cup. And by the way, in GT Daytona, we now have Corey Lewis back at the front of the field by 0.7 seconds. Let's just watch the final stops from the Daytona prototypes as Philippe Albuquerque is rejoined. Renger van der Zander, Shea, is in the pit lane.
And I think he's going to be leaving the pit lane too, because that bright yellow helmet is still behind the wheel of the glossy black Cadillac. Such beautiful colors to paint pictures with. 4 new tires for Renger van der Zander. They didn't clean his windshield. I think they were doing the data logger stick change out though, as they have to do that between hours 6 and 8 of the race. As out on track, that was a little bit of a sketchy moment. But for Renger, he's happy. He's staying in the car. It's warm in there, so there is no reason for him to leave the car as of yet.